Gaurachandra Jaya Dharma Setu Mahadira. Gaurachandra Jaya Dharma Setu Mahadira. Jaya Sankirtana Maya Sundara Sharira. Jaya Sankirtana Maya Sundara Sharira. Gaurachandra Jaya Dharma Setu Mahadira. Jaya Sankirtana Maya Sundara Sharira. Okay, who is the real brahmachari here who memorized it? There was no books previous to Kali Yuga because the disciple could hear all day and remember everything for the rest of his life. Nowadays, we don't have that kind of... Generally, we don't have that. We have memory sticks and hard disks and so many other ways to remember things. So this says, all glories to the most sober Gaurachandra, who is the bridge to religion. All glories to his most attractive form, which is the embodiment of the congregational chanting of the holy names. Purport. This is a long purport. This is Bhakti Siddhanta's Saraswati Thakur. The word Dharma Setu is explained as follows. There is a great difference between worldly or secular duties and transcendental or spiritual duties. That is why Lord Gaurasundar took the position of the topmost Jagat Guru and became the bridge for worldly pious people to enter Vaikuntha. We find that Gaurasundar was the original propounder of the Achintya Beda Beda philosophy, which reconciles the differences between the impersonalist and the Vaishnavas. Gaurahari has not introduced any arrangement for entering the kingdom of religiosity by following any principles that are immoral, concocted, or opposed to one's constitutional duties. The Prakriti Sahajya philosophy, based on maintaining irreligiosity and material sense gratification, freely indulged in under the name of religion, are both mundane or worldly. In other words, they are both based on materialistic external knowledge. Lord Gaurahari, the protector of Sanatana Dharma, taught everyone how to cross beyond material considerations and attain the service of Adhokshaja by building a bridge in the form of preaching the congregational chanting of the holy names of Hari. The word Mahadira is explained. Gaurasundar did not follow the path of argument. Rather, he established the path of the Vedas. He did not preach or display the restlessness of mental speculation based on sense gratification like an ordinary karmi. In other words, he did not instruct anyone to achieve temporary, mundane, perishable happiness. To conquer the urges of one's tongue, belly, and genitals is called dhriti, or self-control, or acceptance of tridanda sannyas. Restless persons devoid of such self-control in the form of controlling the urges of the body, mind, and speech cannot understand anything about the transcendental topics of devotion to Hari. Thus, the devotional service to Hari. Thus, they invite various false arguments through the help of their mundane knowledge. Sri Gaurasundar did not encourage such false arguments. He is most sober and is worshipable by all the sober sannyasis. Although attached householders and the immoral Gauranagaris impudently consider that Gaurasundar was an uncontrolled attached householder engaged in amorous affairs, he is situated far beyond their concocted ideas and is therefore called Mahadira. The word Sankirtana Maya is explained as follows. Although Gaurasundar is himself the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, he is the personification of chanting the holy names of Krishna, and he has manifested his Gaura pastimes in the role of a Mahabhagavat. He is the Supreme Brahman and the personification of worshipable sound in the sacrifice of chanting the holy names. Jai. Om Gana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksuro Militan Yena Tasmai Shi Guruve Namaha Shi Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sajjatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamstha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Desatarane Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo. That is the important link. We're chanting these prayers to the Parampara. Actually, the Vande Hum prayer covers everything, you know, without the names. But for us to finally connect, we need to offer respect to all the Vaishnava devotees, the Lord, the present devotees, who are all engaged in the service of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. The Mukam Karoti Vachalam, Pangam Langayate Garim, Tat Kripa Tamaham Bande, Shigurundina Tarane. So, by the mercy of the Lord, the dumb, blind man can see stars in the sky, and a lame man can climb mountains, and a dumb man can speak eloquently. Dumb has different meanings. I guess normally it means deaf and dumb. No, can't hear. But it's also a word that means stupid. That's the way I learned it. You're dumb. Somebody's dumb, it means they're stupid. Because they can't hear, actually, that means they're stupid. So we want to hear about Krishna. But I found this very interesting, this Dharma Setu, the it means the bridge of Dharma. I don't know if we have this topic so strongly in India as it is in, especially in the good old USA, bridge preaching, trying to make a bridge to the different materialistic groups. So sometimes that backfires because the devotees try to become too much like those people, you know, so they don't feel they can enter in, you know, like an undercover agent or something. So maybe devotees cross over the bridge and don't come back. And or nobody wants to come, you know, when they know we're on the other side, they don't want to come. So, but here's the real bridge, and it's explained a few times in this purport, this Lord Chaitanya is the bridge for pious people to enter Vaikuntha, enter the spiritual world. And it's said by this spreading of the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. So Lord Chaitanya, of course, he was the greatest philosopher. He was the greatest arguer, but he gave that up. We read in the Jiva Dharma, the one of the topmost logicians, you know, around Navadvip. And he just heard some of Lord Chaitanya's previous, you know, logical arguments and got attracted. And he was searching, did he ever write any books about logic? If I learned those, then I could really be the champion arguer. And he met, you know, people who would, some old people had been in the association of Lord Chaitanya. They said, no, he never wrote anything like that. He only wrote the Shishastak prayers. But then he, you know, he realized that if he gave it up, then maybe he should check out this bhakti. And then he became a devotee, much to the distress of his family. Everybody was embarrassed. And a few people like that, it'd be so embarrassing that our family's famous logicians, and now father has gone off to be a Vaishnava, you know, and he's just chanting the holy name all the time. But that's what Lord Chaitanya did. And so he taught, of course he did preach, and he, like when he talked to Sarvabhauma, he didn't argue with Sarvabhauma, he'd listen to him for a long time, and then he just explained his... But this is just a good example that Sarvabhauma was the world's champion arguer. So had Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tried to argue with him right off, he would have argued. He would have argued and argued and argued and never accept defeat. Arguers never, you know. In those days, sometimes they did. Like the Digdivai Pandit, that was the system. If you were defeated, you become a disciple of the person who defeated you. Nowadays, no one will admit defeat. They're like Rukma? You know, when Balaram beat him at the dice game, and he said, no, Balaram didn't really win. I won. Even though the voice from heaven said, Balaram won, he didn't take it. No, I won. Balaram was cheating or something trick. So this Dharma Setu, he's the bridge. He became the bridge for worldly pious men to enter Vaikuntha. And then it's explained that he introduced this Achintya Beta Beta philosophy, which reconciles all the differences. So that's very, very important. That's how Lord Chaitanya took different things from all the four sampradayas. But he made it all make sense and everything come together by this Achintya Beta Beta Tattva. And it's very necessary. Jiva Goswami said, if we can't accept the Achintya Shakti, the inconceivable potencies of the Lord, then we can never understand Him. Scientists, so-called scientists, they want things explained, and, you know, 1, 2, 3, or, you know, how big is it, how much does it weigh, where did it come from, where is it? And Krishna cannot be explained like that. Krishna is everything within everything, and so He's the biggest, and He's the smallest, but everything that's big is within Him. He's the biggest, but He's outside of the biggest. So in material, there's no examples like that. That something can be both big and small. Of course, it can be, according to who's looking at it, according to one's different perception, something may look very big to an ant and doesn't look very big to an elephant or something. But not the same as Krishna. So He reconciled the differences between the impersonalists and the Vaishnavas, because impersonal philosophy is there within Vaishnava philosophy. It's one of, you know, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaneti, Shabdite. It's all there. But it's all coming from Bhagavan. So the Brahman is in the Vaishnava understanding, but it's a small aspect of Bhagavan, the Supreme Person. Whereas the Maya bodies take it to be the all in all. There's nothing, you know, nothing beyond that. So He made everything make sense. But He did not introduce any kind of stupid thing, you know, says here, any principles that are immoral or concocted, like the Sahajiya. The devotees that were there when in the beginning with Prabhupada, he talked about Sahajiya Lad, Mayavadi. Nobody knew what that was. They were wondering, it must be some group, you know, enemies of Prabhupada or something. But it's a philosophical. It's nowadays very, very common, Sahajiya. Sahaj means make it easy, easy. So we find in Bengal and in Orissa, especially the Chaitanyite Sahajiyas. And after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya, they became very prominent. So people had no respect for Chaitanya followers and for the, you know, because these people were the ones that were making all the noise and all the presentation. and they were madmen and immoral. There's many different kinds of sahajiyas. Our Sahotra Swami wrote a book, and you know, describing their different things they're attached to. Some of them, their sadhana is intoxication and sex and different things. Some of them eat fish. They say, well, Garuda ate fish. Garuda's a Vaishnava. He ate fish. You can say, well, why don't you eat snakes? And also, like Chinese people do. And Bhadra Narayan Prabhu yesterday was talking about an atheist he met on the airplane. I met one too. When I was coming from Bangkok to Calcutta, I was next to one guy, and he said, oh yeah, we're life members of Mayapur. Asking me, he said, yeah, but I don't believe in that. My father is into it. You know? I don't believe God is a person. I don't believe there's statues, and I don't believe all this stuff. I don't remember exactly what he was saying, but he kept referring to God as he. He's not this, he's not that. I said, well, you're saying he. He means a person. So if you don't believe he's a person, you have to call him it. And he got bewildered, but then he agreed. He said, that's right. You know, if you're going to say God is not a person, why are you calling him he? He means a person. It's a personal pronoun, isn't it? In English, anyway. In any language, right? In Hindi, you have he and she and him and it. You know, it's personal. It refers to a person. He agreed. They became very friendly, actually, after that. I didn't condemn him or anything, but he just, you know, they're crazy people. And just because of modern life, I think he said he was Arya Samaj or something. But, you know, he didn't feel comfortable to refer to God as it. But that's what they're talking about. It's something that doesn't exist, or something that nobody knows what it is. So there are many different philosophies. Lord Chaitanya, he taught Sanatan Dharma, and he taught, of course, he preached, and we have his very wonderful preaching, especially, you know, when he talked to Sarvabhauma, but mostly he just told everybody to chant Hare Krishna. And he chanted all the time. He worshipped the deity. He did everything by example. So that's why this says, you know, he's the his attractive form, which is the embodiment of the Sankirtan, chanting the holy name of the Lord. His Jaya Sankirtanamaya Sundara Sharira. And we're just reading that. Those prayers were, you know, Pranamami, Sachi Sutta, Sutam, all the glories and beauties of Lord Chaitanya. And he's always chanting the holy name. And that's what he's known for. And he taught by example. He didn't go around preaching so much, you know, human rights, you know, right? That human rights, that was a big issue in America when the non-white people, or whatever they want to call them, or it was quite amazing actually in the 50s, in the back of the bus, and they had the separate toilets, and you know, for the black people, and black people are still, you know, a lot of good musicians, and one guy was in the band, he was late, and they wouldn't let him in the front door, you know, because he was black, had to go to the back, and it was a big thing. Just 50 years ago, 60 years ago. The first time they put a black man on the baseball team, some of the teams refused to play against that team. But now they're all all the big stars getting paid really big. But Lord Chaitanya didn't preach that. He didn't preach, you know, be fair to the Muslims and love the Muslims, but he embraced Haridas Thakur. He glorified him. He put him on a high position in front of everybody. He set the example. And of course he didn't, in all his preaching, there was that one devotee, Subhuti Roy. You know, and he was a zamindar or something. And they had that crazy idea that if you got sprinkled with the water of a Muslim, then you have to become a Muslim. The Hindus made that up, the Brahmins. So that way a lot of Hindus became Muslims. So somebody, you know, they went around sprinkling water. You know, and so he got sprinkled. And he was wondering what to do. And he went to different brahmanas and they said, oh, you know, this is terrible, terrible. In order to atone for this, one told him you have to drink boiling ghee until you die. That way you can atone for this horrible thing of having Muslim water sprinkled on you. Then he met Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, no, no. All you have to just go to Vrindavan and chant Hare Krishna all the time. So he did. He gave up everything and he went to Vrindavan. And he was living in the forest. And he would just pick up the wood that, you know, that falls off the trees. And you see people still doing that. In fact, I saw coming here from the airport, I saw ladies doing it right on the highway divider. You know, picking up the trees and for firewood. So he would collect wood like that and then carry it into the village and sell it, and then he'd have a little money. And then he would use the money for serving the Bengali pilgrims that come to Vrindavan, because they weren't able to eat the Vrindavan food. They couldn't eat chapatis. In those days, you know, you got whatever grew where you live. So they had rice. In Vrindavan, they didn't have rice. They had chapatis. So they couldn't digest that. And then he would get rice and he would get yogurt. And, you know, he would provide food for the Bengalis. Like now we have to have in Mayapur, we have to have pizza and, you know, veggie burgers and all kinds of things to satisfy the different people that come. So he was doing like that, but according to Lord Chaitanya's direction. Didn't have to do some, you know, crazy, crazy fanatic thing, but people were like that. So Lord Chaitanya showed, you know, by example, he embraced Ramananda Roy, and who was, you know, technically a sudra. And as a sannyasi, you know, people were shocked, how is he embracing his sudra? Not only did he embrace him, but he sat down with him every night to hear him talk about Krishna, even though he was a great brahmana. So he showed by example like that. So we need to make this bridge also. The bridge is the spreading of the Sankirtan movement. It's very, very interesting. So Lord Gaurahari, the protector of Sanatan Dharma, taught everyone how to cross beyond material consciousness and attain the service of Adhoksaja by building a bridge in the form of preaching the congregational chanting of the holy names of Hari. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. So whatever our bridge preaching is, of course we need gateways, we need, you know, to bring people in, but we find that whatever type of people we go to, if we just present nice kirtan, everybody likes it in any country. Yoga people, they're mad after kirtan now. And even Bhagavad Gita, you know, they're starting to, because devotees present the real thing. That's the bridge, the real thing. That's the bridge that's not going to collapse. You know, in India, a lot of times the bridges collapse, right? The old bridges. Sometimes the train is delayed because the bridge broke. And even in America, they have a lot of old bridges now, and highways, and they're breaking. But we want to establish everywhere this chanting of the holy name, congregational chanting, Sankirtan. That's what Lord Chaitanya taught, and that's what he did. Even at his birth, you know, he arranged that he would appear at the time of the eclipse. So everybody was chanting. One time in Mayapur, I don't know what year it was the eclipse on Gaur Purnima. And we all went to the Ganga at night to chant. And everybody, we were all sunk up past our knees in the mud of the Ganga and chanting, and it was quite an interesting experience. But so because it was an eclipse, and that's considered inauspicious, and people chant for protection, so he's right away he was, you know, introducing the chanting as part of his life. And then as a child, he would cry, and only the time he would stop crying is when the women would chant. And sometimes he wouldn't stop crying. And then they have to chant more. They say, "Come on, we're chanting. Why don't you stop crying? You're not chanting loud enough," or something. So he was, and then he laid off for a while. You know, he showed his pastimes of scholarship and, you know, all the different things he did in order to, you know, nobody knows exactly why he does anything. But he also demonstrated the power of initiation. You know, initiation is supposed to mean the beginning. The word that Prabhupada translated, Diksha, initiate, means to begin something. Sometimes devotees, at least in the old days, thought it was graduation. You know, okay, I lived in the ashram for so long, I chanted, I did everything, and I got my name now. I'm free. But it's the beginning. But he underwent drastic change. You know, visible change that was noticed by everyone, including himself. And we may not get such a, you know, intense change from getting initiated, but I think everybody feels something, you know, that connection to Krishna. If one is really surrendering what initiation is supposed to mean, is really, you know, throwing away the past, you know, identity, you know, and understanding now I'm a servant of Krishna, I'm not this body, I'm not American or not young or old, or I'm not rich or poor or whatever different designations we might have, but now I'm a servant of Krishna and servant of the spiritual master. So he showed, you know, this incredible change. He went mad after chanting the holy name of the Lord, and even he got, you know, wondering what's going on. And he went back to Ishwarapuri, the spiritual master, and said, "What is this mantra you gave me? You know, I'm going mad. I'm just weeping and crying and dancing, and I can't stop chanting. And what's wrong with me?" And Ishwarapuri said, "That's very good. That's what's supposed to happen. You're very fortunate." And then when he went back to Navadvip, everybody noticed, you know, he's always chanting the holy name, and he's, you know, he was. And all the Vaishnavas were so happy because they had been praying. Because he used to argue with them previously. And he could always defeat them, and the devotees would try to avoid him, and he would always seek them out to get in arguments and defeat them. And they would pray, you know, that if he became a Vaishnava, then he would be such a great preacher, that this would be really wonderful. He's so beautiful, and he's so eloquent, and if he was a Vaishnava, boy, we'd really conquer the world. And he'd say, "Well, thank you for your well wish. I'll show you." He said, "When I become a Vaishnava, there'll be nobody like me." But when he came back after initiation, they noted that he was completely humble. There was no trace of arrogance anymore. That arrogance was all just a big show, you know, just to, I guess, to show the uselessness of scholarship and all those, that kind of mundane scholarship and material prestige. But they were noting that Nimaya has changed completely. He's a Vaishnava, and he was just chanting, and he was saying, you know, he wanted to tell everybody about his experience. And then when he was, the students have been waiting for him. His students were very attached to him. He was such a good teacher. They didn't want to learn from anybody else. But then when he said, "You'll have to go somewhere else now because I can't talk about grammar anymore. Hare Krishna." And he just, everything is the name of Krishna, whatever they ask him. "Tell us about this grammar. He'd just say, "It's all names of Krishna." And then he would say, "Am I all right? You know, did I teach all right?" And, but the students gradually, they at first they thought he'd gone crazy, and people were saying, Mother Sachi got worried, you know, she'd never seen him like that. And at one point, you know, he was crying, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? And, you know, really in anxiety, like beating his head or something. And Gadadhar, his friend, you know, told him, Krishna's in your heart, don't worry. He's right. And he said, I'll get him out. And he started ripping and scratching himself. And Gadadhar somehow calmed him down. And then Satchimata said, you have to stay with my son all the time, you know, because you can keep him down. Some were saying you have to tie him in the bed, you know, tie him so he doesn't hurt himself and put some kind of oil on his head to cool it down. He's got an air problem, vayu, some kind of disturbance in the life airs. One time he even went to Srivas. He said, people are saying I have some disturbance in the life airs. What do you think? Srivas said, I wish I had that. I wish I had the same problem, you know, of this madness, this ecstatic love for God. So then, you know, everybody was so happy. All the Vaishnavas were so happy. And he just threw away all his books and all his scholarship. So he showed in a very, very, you know, dramatic way the effects of initiation. And he took it very, very seriously. Took the order of his spiritual master. Even though he was the greatest scholar, he told him, you're a fool and you can't study Vedanta. Just chant the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And he did it. He just chanted the holy name. And when the Prakasananda, and they asked him, why are you just chanting all the time? Why are you bhavuka, hanging around with sentimentalist fools and just singing and dancing? You're a sannyasi. You should be studying Vedanta. What some of them do. You're not supposed to dance. You know, that's really condemned. Like in Thailand, the Buddhist monks also, they're not supposed to do anything with their body practically. Of course, they do all kinds of things, but dancing and singing is, you know, seems very crazy. But all over the world, in Japan, there's a group of Buddhists that ecstatic dancing is their sadhana. So they take up different things. They learn from Lord Chaitanya. Different people learn different things. Lord Chaitanya's appearance was at an interesting time in the world history. 1400 and what? 96 or something? Huh? 86. So did you ever, you know Columbus? Oh, you know. Even in India, study about Columbus. Columbus Day. In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. And what was he looking for? He was looking for India. He had the idea that if you go across the ocean, you know, you'll get to India, which is true if you wouldn't. But you have to go all the way around South America and everything. And Africa. So he hit North America. And that place is still called the West Indies. And the American natives are called Indians because he thought he was in India. He'd never been there, so he didn't know what it was. So had he found India, it would have been another world, right? Because Lord Chaitanya's movement was happening shortly after that. Instead, he founded the modern America, but then Prabhupada took the Americans to India and spread Lord Chaitanya's movement. And Prabhupada did by unlimited preaching and by his books, but his example was perfect also. George Harrison said, you know, Prabhupada said to chant Hare Krishna, and he was always chanting Hare Krishna. So he took it very seriously. And he saw the devotees in London, and you know what Prabhupada said about London, right? Yeah. The reporter said, Swamiji, do devotees ever go to hell? And Prabhupada said, isn't London hell? So the next day the headline was, Swami says London is hell. And but the devotee and the weather, it's, you know, you never know what, you know, it'll be sunny and then you go out and 10 minutes later it's raining and then it gets cold and it gets sunny again and it's just totally insane, and it's changing a little bit now with the different things, but long, long time you never see the sunshine, you know. That's why the British said only a mad dog and an Englishman will go out in the noonday sun, because the Englishmen in India, they would go out, they'd, wow, the sun, they'd never seen it before, so they wanted to go out. It's a great opportunity. Even I saw in the early days of Mayapur, the devotees from Shivaram and the devotees from London, they were out sunbathing. You know. So, but devotees, they go everywhere to preach. So Prabhupada, he went everywhere and he taught. And then George Harrison, he saw that Prabhupada was always chanting. He also saw that the devotees, no matter what, they went out on Harinam. Raining, cold, hot, no matter what the weather was, every day they were going out. And he admired that very much. He saw they practice what they preach. So the example is the most important thing. St. Francis said you should always be preaching, and sometimes you might have to talk. And you should walk somewhere to preach, but your walking should be your preaching. So very, very intelligent, you know, ideas. And the example is better than precept. And just, you know, talking. And we get that there's modern preachers in America, so-called Christians, they'll actually say, don't do like I do. Do what I say. And parents do that. At least my mother did. You know, she smoked and she knew it was bad. And she tried so hard to tell me don't smoke. You know, in the meantime, she's smoking. It doesn't have any power, any effect. So if devotees are practicing what we preach, if we're just practicing, people will see that. They'll be impressed, even if we don't preach very much. But so here, to conquer the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals is called dhriti. Vachu vegam, manasakrota vegam, jiva vegam, udara pasta vegam. I think Badri was caught in that one yesterday. Yo visaheta diran. Then one can preach all over the world. If he can control the urges of the tongue and the mind and the belly and the genitals, you know, these urges, these pushings, vacho vegam, manasa vegam, krodha vegam, anger, these things are pushing everybody around. Then they can really preach. So Lord Chaitanya was a Mahadira. He was completely self-controlled, undisturbed by anything. If people are disturbed, the senses are disturbed, then how can we preach, you know? And we get envious of someone that has some material opulence or something. The devotees know that everyone is suffering, everyone is poor. We're distributing prasadam, you know, to the school lunch. So not every kid in all those schools is poor or starving, but they're getting prasadam. Somebody's criticizing, like, you know, but we try, and that's why we make restaurants, so the rich people will get prasadam, because they might not want to take free prasadam, right? In New York City, they have a prasadam to the homeless, but there's a few businessmen come by every day and take a plate. They like it. You know, they don't need the money, but they just think it's nice. They're not ashamed to eat with the homeless people. So we're trying to give Krishna to everyone. That's why we're spreading the holy name of the Lord. And this is the bridge so people can cross over to Vaikuntha. And not just to Vaikuntha, but to the Goloka, to be with Lord Chaitanya. So he's very sober and worshipful. People might have criticized him, Prabhupada mentions that, you know, different crazy sahajas, they might have criticized Lord Chaitanya. So Sankirtanamaya, he is the personified Sankirtan, personification of chanting the holy name of the Lord. He's also, of course, the personified Srimad Bhagavatam. His pastimes are exactly in line with all the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's obvious that he's Krishna. The great devotees are recognizing that and saying it, but we can compare the pastimes the Sankirtan, congregational chanting of the holy name, is the same as the Rasa dance. In fact, many of his intimate associates were gopis in the Krishna Leela. Nityananda's associates were gopas more, and some were both. Some were going back and forth. Lord Chaitanya wasn't stealing milk and butter because he wasn't in the cowherd community, but he was making a lot of trouble, you know. But why would he do that? You know, because it says in the 10th canto, actually, that Krishna knows everything. He knows that children are the most attractive. Notice how Badrinarayan noticed the children every time a child cries. So you can't help but notice it, and everybody notices, and they're very charming. Especially a naughty child, you know, attracts a lot of attention. Small, if they're bigger, then we don't like that. But a very small one, we like. That's why children get confused, you know. It's very hard to grow up. I don't know if we can remember, but, you know, when you're little, no matter what you do, oh, it's so wonderful, oh, and glorious, you know. The child can break everything in the house or do anything, and everybody's glorifying him. But all of a sudden, don't do that! Don't do that! Don't touch this! Don't touch that! And, but you know, last week you said it was wonderful, you know. Isn't it? So it's very hard, you know. And sometimes with new devotees we do that. You know, someone guest is coming, and oh, wonderful, wonderful. Then they get a little bit familiar, and don't touch this, don't do that, you know. First time I was at the, I don't know, one of the first times I went to the temple, I was long hair and looked quite degraded. Actually, I was pretty clean, but didn't look like it. And, you know, I followed the regulative principles. And I didn't know what they were, but I just got so tired of the nonsense activities. So I was so happy when they told me about the four regular principles. Because I thought, what's wrong with me? You know, I don't like these things anymore. I don't have any. How can I associate with my friends or anything? You know, I become weird. You know, I saw the kitchen. They really cooked a huge feast, and there was just a few brahmacharis, and I saw the kitchen just piled up with dirty pots. So I was a householder. I said, let's help clean the kitchen. You know, so I went in the kitchen, started cleaning, and the brahmachari, get out of the kitchen, you dirty, you know, hippie. That was the new bhakta program. That was the new bhakta program back then. You had to really want it, you know. It wasn't like they babied you into it in those days. But anyway, the example is the most important. We want everyone to chant the holy name. So however we can arrange to get people to chant the holy name, but purely chanting the holy name, we don't need, you know. And Lord Chaitanya, of course, he went out every morning, Udilo Aruna, Pura Babaji, Dwijamani Gora Amani Jagi, Tattai Tattai Bajala Kol, which is important. Kol means what? Not boom, 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 boom. Jimbe. Right. I one boy told me once, the djembe is much better than the mridanga. I said, if Lord Chaitanya, if it was better, he would have used it, you know. Prabhupada would have used it. They did exist, you know. It's not like a new invention. It's been used in, you know, whatever they use them for in Africa for a long time. But the sweet mridanga, madhurya mridanga, you know, nice sounds. And spreading the holy name, making it very, very attractive so that everybody can hear it, and reaching out to, you know, all kinds of places. Now we see devotees, you know, and there's many, many facilities now with the internet, which we all need to exploit much more, you know, to get people directed, like I saw that Vaishnava Seva is trying to do to make a thing to bring more hits to, you know, proper Krishna conscious stuff. And the more we put out there, the more people will connect. They'll hear the holy name. But mostly the one-on-one preaching, devotees going out, meeting people, giving them books, you know, personally talking to people. This is very powerful. And public chanting where everybody can, you know, see the devotees. I was telling the other day about that girl in Japan. And she's just been going out like every day, just chanting around. And the television was interviewing her, and you know, they asked her this question about something called sleep paralysis. I think it's in Japan they get some interesting diseases. They had one called Wakai Byo, young people sickness. Young people just wouldn't come out of their room. They just didn't want to face life, you know. And the mother would just put some food or something in. I just heard of this one, but it's probably people wake up and they can't move, you know, because they hate their job so much or something. And they don't want to, so they just get sick. So she just sang Hare Krishna and played music and answered the question in Japanese and kept chanting in between. And the cameraman and the other guy were laughing so much. They were so happy, you know. Probably the best thing, you know, the only interesting interview they ever had. Somebody really happy and chanting Hare Krishna. But she's attracted so many people. They had Harinam on the day before Gaur Purnima, and they got like 9 girls or something came to join her. People had never been out on Harinam before. You know, just from 2 or 3 girls going out chanting every day. So the power is, that's what Lord Chaitanya did, and that's what he told his disciples to do. That's what Haridas Thakur did. Lord Nityananda, door to door, Bhaja Krishna, Bolo Krishna, Kodo Krishna, Shiksha. You know, worship Krishna, chant Krishna, and teach about Krishna. Not only just for yourself. And he told everybody, that's all I'm asking. Just chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. That's the only donation I'm asking. The only charity I want. I don't want money. I don't want anything else. Just chant the holy name. Because he knew that if someone chants even once, you know, something happens. Kuch kuch kotehe. Right? Something happens, you know, if you chant Hare Krishna. And you can't really explain it. That's why we tell people, do it. You know, just chant. We can't explain exactly. We can say so much about the glories of the holy name, and you know, even Krishnadas Kaviraj said there's so many slokas glorifying the holy name that, and I'm trying to find that verse. If somebody can find it, I'd be happy. But he actually says that the book would become too big if I put everything in there, that all the different glorification of the holy name is just so unlimited, you know. And so it's an offense to think it's an exaggeration or it's imagination. People will think, well, you just say that, just like, you know, everybody advertises their goods. I see so many advertisements for different things that everybody knows are no good, but, you know, they make them sound really good. Like, you really have to have this. That's advertising. Maybe some of you studied advertising. We needed more advertising. We need to advertise the holy name, but advertising that was declared long ago by one of the leading businessmen, that advertising is to make people buy things that they don't need with money they don't have. So, because now you can borrow money, right? And you can buy whatever you want. In Ghana, I was there, they didn't have credit cards, and still people are afraid to use them because there's so much criminals, but they had a big billboard. Now you can get everything you've ever wanted, you know. And people think that, why? Yeah, I don't have to pay for it. Just, you know. If you use a credit card, it's so fast, you know. And they're supposed to check the ID and check the signature and everything. In all the years I've used a credit card, that happened once or twice. They just, and it's finished, you know. Your money's there. You have to pay, you know. But they don't check because the store knows maybe it's not the right person. They're not going to get the money. But, you know, if they pass it through, they get it. But Lord Chaitanya, he giving freely the love of Godhead, and one should take that at any price. But the only price is faith. And Bhaktivinod said, you better hurry up and get to the marketplace of the holy name because Jagai and Madai are taking everything. They're taking all the nectar. But, you know, but we also know that it grows. The more it's distributed, the more people get the holy name, the more people get the Krishna Bhakti, the more it's there, the more it increases. So that's Lord Chaitanya, that's the bridge preaching. I was very happy to find this because you get a lot of people talking, we need, you know, Prabhupada's books or not. You know, we can't give out his books, we have to have bridge books, something that's in between. And of course, we want everybody to write books, but so many people have, the first time they ever got a book was Bhagavad Gita. They just completely changed their whole life all over the world. So, but we need to be out there and give them all these things, give them the Bhagavad Gita. It doesn't matter, India, where, you know, they used to say it's impossible to distribute books in India. That was in Prabhupada's time. You know, everybody says, we have it at home. We have Hindi, Gujarati, we have, most of them, they never, it wasn't even Bhagavad Gita, whatever they have at home, they don't know. And if they did have it, they never read it. But devotees were persistent. Devotees kept, you know, talking. And now, you know, you can't keep up. Everybody wants it. And not only in India, but other countries also. I gave one boy a book in America on the campus. And I said, well, you look really spiritual, you know. And he said, no, I'm an ordinary person. And he was very humble. And I put the Bhagavad Gita in his hand, you know, and he was talking to me. Then he looked at the Bhagavad Gita and said, I'm looking for this book. Where can I get it? I said, well, I just happen to have an extra one here. And it was amazing. You know, he was looking for the Bhagavad Gita. Once in a while that happened. But everybody's actually looking for it. Not everybody's heard of it exactly. Not everybody knows what it is. But many people do. They're actually looking. They heard about it somewhere. They saw it at somebody's house. You know, they might have met a devotee before, but they, for some reason they don't get it. But many people, they want Krishna. They want Bhagavad Gita. They want absolute knowledge. They want happiness. They think happiness. Bhagavad Gita is far beyond happiness. Lord Chaitanya is, you know, ecstasy, bliss. He was not teaching some, you know, mundane happiness, satisfaction in the material world, peace of mind. Or he's giving the topmost. It's only for the soul. The Bhagavad Gita, Lord Chaitanya's teaching, our movement is for the soul. And then automatically the mind and the body, everything else will be pacified. We'll be able to tolerate the, you know, the natural disturbances of the mind and body if we get on the spiritual platform. Otherwise, there's no hope of any kind of happiness. Bliss is only for the soul. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that there's always a conflict between the mind and the soul because the mind cannot experience bliss. The mind can only get some kind of flickering happiness and then start wondering, is this really happiness? And, you know, maybe there's better happiness. You know, I bought this new whatever it is and it made me happy. Even I remember when I was in high school, my boss bought a new car. He bought a Thunderbird car, which was supposed to be something. And I asked him, did this car make you happy? He said, well, it did for a few minutes. And I should have got a Cadillac. He said, now it's too late, you know, because if you already bought it, if you sell it, you lose like half or something, you know. So that's the way material life is. We work so hard to get some sort of idea of happiness, and then we're not sure if it's really happiness. Or, you know, the next advertisement, there's something much better coming up. But the spiritual happiness is anandam buddhi vardhanam. It's always increasing. The ocean of spiritual bliss is always increasing. And we can always join in that just by chanting the holy name, just by crossing the bridge, you know, joining Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. We don't want to be like, you know, that we had a drama we used to do quite often when I first joined called the Rocks or something. And so there were three men carrying their bag of rocks. And then across the river was the Sankirtan party, and they, you know, and they're saying, "Come on, join us, join us, join us." And the first guy said, "No, you know, I have to carry my rocks. This is my dharma, you know." And he just went off to the rock market or something. And the second one, he was very attached to his rocks, and he thought, "Well, I'll join." He jumped in the river, but he drowned. Then the third one threw away all the rocks and swam across and joined them. So the message is, if we want to really join the Sankirtan, real initiation means, okay, we give up. I'm not what I used to be. I'm not connected anymore. Be like that Murari Chaitanya. You know him? He was a disciple of Saranga Thakur. There's there in Mamgachi and in Navadvip. And he was a young boy and he died. He was bitten by a snake. So they didn't cremate young boys. They would float him on a bamboo raft or a banana tree raft or something down the river. Some say they were hoping a snake charmer might, you know, fix him. But that's what they did with the bodies of the young boys. And then there was this Saranga Thakur, great devotee of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya was always telling him, "You should be taking disciples." And he said, "No, no, I don't want to." Finally, he agreed. He said, "All right, the next person I meet, you know, I'll initiate that person." So he was taking his bath in the morning, early morning, and this dead body bumped into him, and he just put his foot on or something and said, "Chant Hare Krishna," you know. And the boy came back to life. And, you know, naturally became very attached to his guru. So the parents heard that their boy came back to life. And they came to say, "Oh, we're your parents. Come back with us." And he said, "No, you threw me down the river. You know, he's my father now." And he stayed there. And he was a completely transcendental. He had absolutely no fear of death. He would go and slap tigers, play with them. So I think even ride a tiger, scare everybody. Sometimes he'd just go underwater for a few days. He'd already been dead, you know. He didn't have to worry. But in the point is, he gave up everything. He gave up his previous identity completely at the point of initiation. Lord Chaitanya too. He didn't forget his mother. But he became a completely different person. He gave up all his education and all his, you know, whatever, his position in society and everything. I simply chant the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. So yesterday was a very good day of katha. I was ill and I was trying to tune in upstairs, but it wouldn't tune in very good. Felt bad. I didn't know there was a radio. But a very good day with so much katha and so many devotees hearing the holy name. Today there's a little more, right? Holy and drama. I think Lord Chaitanya did holy also. Did he? With his friends? No, I don't know that. He did other things. So, Bhadranarayan ended yesterday asking everyone to buy a full set of Chaitanya Charitamrita. I tried that once in Los Angeles. One, somebody bought one. Of course, many, many devotees have it already. But we do have it. We should be reading it regularly. I said in the beginning, it was the only solace of Bhaktisiddhanta. Towards the end of his life was reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Prabhupada on the ship. And, you know, it was not an easy time on the ship, even though he had a nice cabin and everything. Physically, it was very hard for him, and his only solace was the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it's a very, very important book, and everything is there. Perfect behavior of Lord Chaitanya and all the devotees, perfect philosophy, and the perfect conclusion. You know, Kirtaniya Sadahari, that was Lord Chaitanya's, you know, final final chapter is the Shishastak prayer. Lord Chaitanya's ecstatic, you know, commentary on the Kirtaniya. Trinadapi sanichena tadorapi sishena. Amani namanadena kirtaniya. More tolerant than a tree. I was walking in the Mayapur behind over by the Jalungi, and I saw one tree, and so many people had cut their name in that tree, you know, cut their initials in there and put drawings. And I thought, you know, trees have to tolerate that. They have to tolerate so many things. Can't complain. You know, just think if somebody came up to you and carved their name on it. It'd be torture. They'd be arrested, you know. But the tree has to tolerate that. Someone wrote from America, it was a big storm, and they could hear the trees breaking from the weight of the ice on the trees. You know, they just have to stand there, and they get so buried in ice and snow, and then branches just crash to the ground. And then a few days later, it was hot. And then a few weeks later, it's really hot. They have to stand out in the sun, the ones that didn't break completely. They'd be more tolerant than a tree and lower than a, you know, humble than a blade of grass. If people step on the grass, it just comes back up. And offer all respects to others and don't expect anything in return. I see a lot of quotes from Radhanath Swami, and he's just saying that in many different ways. We have to be humble. That's what Lord Chaitanya likes. And that's when we can chant all the time. Offering all respect to others. Not expecting anything. Not looking for any honor in the material world. You might get honored, you know, if you surrender to Krishna, serve Krishna, you'll be honored. But not caring for that. Giving all credit to Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. Not too much overtime. Any question? Or is today holiday also? Today holy? Is today the holy day or the colors day for the public?